blank.
Sweet Jesus.
Welcome back to Maximoff Overdrive, the podcast that had so much fun with the Hex. We're back now for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Lisa Schmeiser, and with me, as always, are Kelly Gamont.
Howdy do, Buckaroos.
And Don Melton.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's Don Melton. He's going to sing a song for you. Anyway, you guys know the drill. This is a show where we go nuts over Disney Plus's latest episode dropped, this time for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and our podcast is broken down into three sections. The recap portion, where we briefly go through what happened this week and which events stand out as significant. The react portion, which goes on forever because we have a lot to react to. And finally, a new segment we like to call Really? With Kelly and Lisa, where Don drops all of his Marvel Comics knowledge on us, and all we can do is just say, really? Because it blows our minds. Before we get started with our ritual of seeing who's going to do the recap this week, I'd like to do a little bit of housekeeping. As you may note, Wanda Maximoff is nowhere near this show, because she's off in the wilderness, doing crazy magic things. And we want to keep this crazy plane afloat, moving from Marvel show to Marvel show. So we decided we're changing the name of the podcast. We're no longer Maximoff Overdrive, which is admittedly an awesome name. We are now I Want My MCU TV. So shout out to everyone who would come home from school and immediately glue their eyeballs to the television watching MTV back in the day. This title goes out to all of you. We are, again, I Want My MCU TV. And what we love about this title, what makes us so excited about it, is this gives us a mandate to go back and look at any show that's been taking place during the MCU. So after Falcon and the Winter Soldier is over, we can move on to Loki, or we can hop over to Netflix and work our way through Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and maybe even Iron Fist. Mm-hmm. God, I heard that, Dawn.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It was a maybe. I mean, if you're good, Dawn, we don't have to go there.
Yeah. I gotta say, I do like the four of them together in The Defenders. I loved that series. And also, listeners, if you guys are super good during incomparable membership drives, maybe we will even tackle a tongue-in-cheek rewatch of The Inhumans for you.
Bite me. Jeebus, really? Really?
Don, it's okay. I have a counter offer. I think we're going to, this may end up being an Agents of Smooch inspired event where we do what they do over there, which is called the Incomprehensible.
Yes.
Where you drink many beverages and we watch it together and talk about it.
We could do a drinking game for that. Drink every time they've missed you, Sarinda Swan's magnificent presence. Drink.
That's a lot of beverages.
Drink every time you wish Ken Lung had a scene.
Okay, there's a big, big difference between let's play a drinking game and let's try to kill ourselves with alcohol.
Is there, though? I think it depends on what you're drinking. We could if we could come up with like a signature cocktail for this too.
Oh, Lisa, that's a whole podcast for Kelly if you get her started on that.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, we're spinning off from the TV podcast feed. We're our own thing now. Big thanks to encouragement from the Incomparable, especially Jason Snell, who was like, oh, why not? Of course, this is going to happen. And to Anthony Johnson, who produced the magnificent artwork for our new podcast.
We Anthony!
Yeah. Much love to Anthony.
He's so gorgeous.
Anyway,
artwork.
These two dudes are the best, and as are my fellow podcasters. And we hope you continue to come along with us, because we are super excited to plumb the depths of the MCU together. I may or may not have vaguely alluded to my husband that there's a chance that we could also watch the 1990s X-Men series as part of this podcast, so who knows?
that would be fun. It's Marvel Television.
Yeah, it is Marvel Television. It has Gambit, who is, according to Philip Michaels, the best X-Men.
I do like a soupçon of Gambit, you know, in my X-Men. Yeah. Okay, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about another show.
All right, so we're here to talk about episode 2 of The Falcon and the Snowman. Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I just said The Falcon and the Snowman, didn't I? Yes, Timothy Hutton and Sean Penn.
Everybody
like
take a drink whenever Lisa does that. That's the new
That's
rule.
Why I figured if we could get most of the way there with the Falcon and the Winter Snowman, then we'd be, you know, good enough.
Do you want to fight a snowman? Punch him once in his sweet face.
With your big metal arm.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
Right, yeah,
okay.
Well,
that's what I'm doing when I'm listening to Dawn Drop Science. Like, the back of my brain is going to be, do you want to fight a snowman?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Okay.
Listen,
let's start.
Folks, just so you know, it's drinking and show tunes in the pre and post show every time we record.
That's true.
Yeah. He doesn't lie. This is like one of those things where I'm not sure people should be grateful that we don't live stream the episode, or if they're like,
oh God,
they don't do that. I don't need to see. How
I'm sure that would be a violation of the Sokovia Accords if we did that.
Oh wow, you know what? Violation of the Sokovia Accords is like a great reason to trot out for anything.
Yes.
I feel like we should just start using that from now on when we don't like the development of no, that's a violation of the Sokovia
no.
Accords. I'm sorry.
That's it. Yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm, indeed.
Nope.
We are never going to get to the summary, are we?
No.
Well, you know, I keep kicking this football down the road, but we finally caught up to it, and it is now time for the recap portion of I Want My MCU TV. And the question is, Kelly or Dawn, did either one of you prepare a recap of this week's episode?
I did not.
Oh, God, no.
I just really like how Dawn's like, no, don't even. You have to admire my optimism in trying week after week, don't you?
Well, we actually got Kelly to do it last week, which
exactly.
just stunned me. And it was fabulous.
I know.
And then we had dueling recaps. And I wanted it to be Thunderdome, but you two wouldn't cooperate.
No.
Dance off, bro.
It's against the Sokovia Accords.
It would be a violation of the Sokovia Accords. Where were you, Dawn?
All right. So I will do the recap super quick, and then we'll get to reacting to an episode that I actually think was stronger than the first one.
Yes,
and I look
agreed.
Forward to everyone else's assessment of it. So recap for episode 102. The boys are back together, and they got their butts kicked by the lady who's heading up the Flag Smashers. So let's rewind a bit. Here's how they get together. Bucky crashes Sam's workplace as he's about to go off and do some recon on the Flag Smashers. And the reason Bucky's there is because he too has seen the press conference, the Good Morning America event, where the new Captain America was unveiled. He's not pleased. And so he decides to get up in Sam's grill again at Sam's workplace. You had no right to do that, which is exactly the wrong thing to say to Sam, who is like, you are literally the last person who should tell me what my rights are. Anyway, this so ticks off Bucky, who wants that shield back, who loathes the new guy, who like basically just marinates in loathing everything, that he's like, all right, Sam, this is how it is. I'm coming to work with you.
I didn't know it was take your snowman to work day.
Take your frenemy to work day. So the two of them commute to Munich, as you do when you are a freelancer,
right.
And crash a warehouse where they discover that the Flag Smashers are moving contraband, but they're not moving weapons and dangerous cool stuff. They're actually moving vaccines and medicines and things that they're planning on shipping off to like refugee camps. They follow the convoy. Bucky thinks he's rescuing a hostage in the back truck of the convoy. Turns out she's the leader of the pack. She's a super soldier, as are everyone else in the convoy. Sam and Bucky like are used as rags to wipe the German Autobahn. And when the new Captain America and his sidekick show up, they are similarly whooped by this group of Flag Smashers. That's what happens. Captain America keeps trying to... I can't call him Captain America, you guys. I just can't. I'm just calling him John. Anyway, John, who is the dude who's currently wearing the suit and focused group, keeps trying to persuade them to join. It's not happening. Sam says a lot of really pointed things to John and his pal about how the only people who get head up about redistributing goods are the ones who have more than enough to go along with. So this dynamic is echoed a little bit later in the episode when Sam is profiled by the police, and it's only the fact that he's Avenger that keeps him from going face down on the pavement for the second time in the episode. The whole scene is really unnerving and harrowing to watch. And seeing how gently Bucky is handled for an arrest on an outstanding warrant during that same interaction, compared to how Sam is being shot down, shouted at with guns drawn, really underlines the point that not all Avengers are treated equally. So here's the question. Why was Bucky arrested? And more pertinently, why are he and Sam on the street where Sam gets profiled for talking while black? And the answer is, after they get their butts kicked by Carly Morgenthau, who's heading up the Flag Smashers, Bucky's like, you know what we can do? We need to figure out where this super soldier stuff is coming from. I'm going to introduce you to America's first black super soldier, who is a man who wiped the floor with me in Vietnam. I think he might have a pointer. That conversation does not go well. It's also understandably upsetting to both Bucky and Sam for different reasons, because, as it turns out, Isaiah Bradley, after serving his country, after doing some of the messiest jobs that the U.S. government sent him to do, got thrown in jail for 30 years and used as a lab experiment. So this upsets Bucky and Sam for separate but slightly related reasons. Bucky, because he too was ill-used by a group that treated him like a lab experiment and a weapon. And Sam, because this is U.S. government hogwash, which is like the Tuskegee Airmen and the Tuskegee experiments combined in one horrible buried segment of U.S. history. He's really upset, and it just keeps coming back to him again and again and again that no matter how much people like him put their lives on the line for their country has no problem burying his names and his deeds because they're not focus grouped tightly enough. Anyway, at the end of the episode, the two dudes survive a hilariously bad couples therapy experience.
It's classic. That entire scene is worth watching the episode for.
Yeah. And then they decide, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get the shield back. And we think going to see Baron Zemo is a really great idea. So that's where that episode ends. Also, and I consider this to be extremely B-plot, but it's necessary for moving the wheel forward. We get to meet the new Captain America, who's a guy named John Walker, who comes off like a focus group's dream and a complete apple polisher. Like, he went to West Point, and he's got a physique and a brain that are above average, and he's heavily decorated and just a really nice guy, and he's got like the Steve Rogers haircut and says all the right things on camera, and he even comes with his own black bestie, who's basically like, the two of them come off as like a corporate version of Steve and Sam. It comes off as, oh, it's Steve and Sam, but this time they have endorsements. Anyway, Walker desperately wants the public stamp of approval from Bucky and Sam. He's not happy that he can't get it, and he finally warns the two of them to stay out of his way while he goes after the Flag Smashers. So that's where we are.
Excellent recap.
Good summary.
Yeah.
Yes. Good summary. Good recap.
Shall we move on to the reaction portion of events here?
Well, I think we have to add the section here for the soul gazing. No, I'm kidding.
Every recap now includes soul gazing, where we all just very quiet in the microphone.
You just have to scoot closer. Move your chair.
I didn't want to recap like the entire therapy session because I felt like no one can do it justice. You have to watch it.
Yes. Now that we're at reaction, a whole lot of this episode gave me strong, wow, they went there, and I was into it. Like, I mean, it was a thing we sort of mentioned last week when we talked about, Sam thinking he was doing the right, Sam saying he thought he was doing the right thing and in giving up the shield, and, you know, the conversation he had, and then him going to the, to ultimately fail at getting a loan with his sister, and like one thing and another, and, you know, talking about how, we sort of wondered how hard they were going to lean into some of that stuff. And, turns out pretty hard. So, like, that was a thing that really surprised me. Like, there was a moment when I was sort of wowing to myself that, you know, at, look how they all stopped in the first place because of Sam. Turns out they were there for Bucky, and like how the dynamic changed the moment they got there.
The thing is they weren't there for Bucky. They were there because they saw a black man shouting at a white man.
Yes.
And then when they ran.
The other cops that came for Bucky.
The other cops are like, oh, we ran the warrants. But like, the thing is they would have been willing to shoot Sam. Like, they make that really clear.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That the only reason.
The only reason he escaped with his life is because he's the Falcon.
Yeah.
He's an Avenger. Yeah.
And they, I think what I loved about this episode is you get a real sense, like you get a real sense that Sam is done being a duck. Like, in other words, like smoothly gliding on the surface while he works like hell underneath. Yep. Like, and he is fine with laying it down to Bucky, where he's like, the world does not work for you and I in the same way. You are white and the rules are different for you. And if Steve had given you the shield, we wouldn't even be in this situation. But I can't keep the shield because someone would take it from me. That's how it works. And then when the work that Anthony Mackie does in the scene with Isaiah, and just the look on his face, like he's between pity and horror, and like he looks like he's about to be sick because he's just so sick at like what's been done to this guy.
Yeah, and it's so much for him all at once, like to find out.
But I think he's also looking at this and going, "This is probably me."
But gang, they got Carl Lumbly to play Isaiah Bradley. Mantis. They got Mantis to play him. I thought it was great casting. And I want to see more of him, and I want to see him not just pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was priceless. Also, I thought the whole, you know, your whole point about going there, I thought was really cool. I was riveted to the introduction of John Walker. Because notice what they did with John Walker through the episode. It's really subtle. They were not going to go make him a Southern grit-spitting racist, where, you know, he's sometimes a little bit like that in comics. They were just going to make him like a really nice guy. The key thing for me was...
Well, he's nice now because he was trying to get what he wanted.
Exactly. But John Walker in the comics is a patriotic villain, but he doesn't start out that way even in the comics. He's a bit of a jerk, but he doesn't start out that way in the comics. But the key thing about Walker in looking at him and this sort of degradation about when he starts to become more of a jerk in the episode is track the amount of facial hair he has.
I didn't even think of that.
And the filmmakers were just so subtle with things like that, with lighting, with body language, and Wyatt Russell was having the time of his life playing that. I thought just perfect casting for that. And here's a person who can actually portray somebody who's earnest and not a jerk and, you know, trying to be the best Captain America, and then steps over the line like, but I want you to be my sidekick.
I need it to be okay with you. Like, it would, what does he say? It would be so much easier with your endorsement.
That we could Uncle Tom this. Yeah. That we could Uncle Tom this.
I actually was a little bit surprised by how viscerally upset I got at him coming out to the pageantry on the field with the black collegiate band.
Yep.
Because I have to be honest, because you do see a little clip of that. Remember, you saw a little clip of that in the previews, but you just saw the back of Captain America and you saw the band. And when I first saw the previews, your first thought is, of course, Marvel are a bunch of lying liars who lie. They're just bringing you in. All of these scenes are out of context and you're building the narrative in your head. That's the first thought, right? But yes. The second thought I had was, ooh, I hope this means that Sam's going to become Captain America and he's going to show the world what it's like to be somebody who loves being black and being an American, because this means the definition of America is expanding, and what a great way to end the series that would be, is the thing I thought, right? And then this happens, and you see the ex-football hero who's got this impressive resume come out to the black band, and he's got the convenient black best friend who is the sidekick. And I was just like really upset at the appropriation of the symbolism, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I remember there was a documentary series on Netflix a couple of years ago called Marching Orders, which was about the Marching Wildcats, who are a competition marching band at Bethune-Cookman University down in Florida. And like, these kind of competition bands are serious business, and they have a serious culture of unrelenting excellence. Like, that is just the mindset everybody goes into it with, where the whole point is we're going to give these people a show, and we can do the best show possible because we're going to be our best possible selves, and no excuses. You leave it all out in the field. And it's just the juxtaposition of the two I found upsetting and jarring. And I think that was the point. I think that's why
the people who did
the episode did this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, well done. But like, it put me in the headspace where all of the other scenes that we had with Sam really landed hard, like in a good way.
Look how hard they're trying to sort of sell him as like, as Captain America, and like coming out and trying to be all modest and everything. And I feel like we got a glimpse of him when Sam and Bucky both nope out. Like literally nope out. They're both like, nope. And Bucky tells them stop the car. They get out and they decide to walk the rest of the way, whatever, however long that is. And we get a little bit more of him like outside the police station, what it's like when he doesn't get his way. And like that glimpse of it near the end of the episode gave me a lot of like, this, we're throwing down with this dude. And I'm not even sure that it's necessarily going to be over the shield, you know, so much. Although I did like the moment when I think it's Bucky says, let's just take the shield back. You know, like you let's know, screw
it.
That
we've,
guy.
We've tried we're just, nice about this.
It's ours. You know, like whoever's it is. We get a couple of accidentally honest conversations from them as well. Which I really liked. And yes, it took our amazing therapist, who the therapist's name escapes me now. But she's amazing and I love her. And she manages to get Sam and Bucky together to sit down and have this conversation. And
you mean Amy Aquino, right? That's
yes,
the name
but I can't remember.
Her.
She's Dr.
Rainer.
Rainer. Okay. So Dr. Rainer, who I love, I think I don't remember how I described it last week, but it was something about them being, you know, entertainingly antagonistic or something close. And she gets them to sit down and have this couple of moments of honesty. And, you know, like Sam is baffled why Bucky's so hung up on the shield, because he says, like, it has nothing to do with you. And then Bucky comes back with, you know, this was Steve's whole life, and he trusted his life and his legacy to you, and you didn't do it. And so what if he was wrong about you? And if he was wrong about you, he could be wrong about me too. And after, cause I think Isaiah telling him, that he was the, you can't just decide who you're going to be when you wake up every day. I think that kind of shook him a little bit. And so I think he still kind of had that rattling around. So he sort of accidentally blurted out, you know, if Steve was wrong about you, he was wrong about me too. And so that was another time like, oh, they went there. And, you know, Bucky going to jail, like, oh, they went there, you know. And then turns out John Walker is who bails them out, you know, bails Bucky out because he's trying to, you know, get in good with him and whatever. And time after time, like they went there. And, you know, like when we meet Isaiah, they went there. And finding, like, because, like, for Sam, like, there's way, like, you just see it on his face, wave after wave after wave of information. Oh my God, there's another super soldier. Oh my God, he goes back that far. Oh my God, I'm sure the word Tuskegee ran through his head too, Lisa. Why didn't anybody tell me about this? Why didn't I know there were more? Like, you just see every new realization as he tries to take in this guy.
Well, it's the idea that when you have a white super soldier, you slap him onto stamps and you make him the part of a roadshow and you trot him out and he's the face of America. But when you get somebody who has basically the same personality as Steve, like, because remember the whole point of the serum is, oh, you have to have the personality or else it just turns you into a monster. You know, you get somebody who is effectively, you know, the same cut from the same cloth as Steve. He's just black. And instead, he's buried in history and thrown in jail and used as a lab experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And to see Sam parse this all over again and be like, you know, I thought I had swallowed all of the crap my country had given me, but now here's even more.
But wait, there's more. Now how much would you pay?
I'll have more to say about the serum in the third half of the show.
The third half.
There's some background that maybe you guys are making assumptions on, I want to correct, but also where the character comes from.
I was really glad that we got the setup last week of, like, who they are, what's their deal now, what they're doing, you know, all of that. And basically, because now that we've put them together, I just sort of want to watch the two of them sort of get on each other's nerves the entire time, because, like, the chemistry between the two of them is just spectacular. And I love everybody else. I love Dr. Rayner. I do hope we get more Isaiah. I'm really interested in Carly.
Although I really loathe the hackneyed cliche of, oh, you can tell he's like a cultured criminal because he listens to the classical music. And ooh.
To one piece of classical music that we always hear when it's a bad guy.
It's the stupid Hannibal Lecter thing all over again. Like, there's just this trope that there's a certain class of criminal that wouldn't be caught listening to anything that was composed after the Regency period. And you're like, oh.
Did either of you notice what cell he was in?
No.
Cell number 2187.
No way.
Go back. I didn't notice it the first time. I noticed it the second time.
So why is that significant?
Tell.
It's from Star Wars.
Yes, it's the...
That's where Princess Leia was being held. Cell block cell 2187.
Exactly on the Death
Star. Cell block AA-23.
Before the pre-show, I told everybody there was going to be a Star Wars reference, so... Yeah, and so this is the whole plan to do a crossover, so between the two universes. So. Anyway, they do tricks like that all the time. But it was kind of a throwback. Remember the introduction of Magneto in the X-Men movies?
Yeah.
You know, he's playing chess with the glass chess or acrylic chess pieces and music playing in the background and stuff like that. It reminded me of that.
It's just so cliched at this point.
Well, and it's the same piece of music, and of course now the name of it's escaping me, but it's like that piece of music that they use all the time. Just like when something sad happens, they use Requiem for a Dream as the music underneath that. Like, it's the same sort of thing. Like, we roll this out to let you know that this is a fancy pants criminal. And yeah, I'm with you, Lisa. I'm kind of over it. Like, I just want to hear, I want to cut to a criminal in a cell like that and just have them rocking out to Katy Perry or something. Like, you know, Steely Dan, like literally anything else, like just, you know, like some really, really horrible on an intergalactic scale villain who's just totally into like Brampton Comes Alive, you know, I don't know.
This is something you'll see in Guardians of the Galaxy, not in this particular part of the MCU.
I know.
Speaking of music, though, did anybody notice the music in the other parts, particularly, you know, the episode was called The Star-Spangled Man. And the music that's playing when John Walker is, you know, out on the football field and stuff like that.
It's a riff on the music they used to introduce Steve.
Yeah. When he was doing the road show in the cheap suit Captain America in the first movie. But they also used some of Cap's music from the other movies when he's fighting and doing other things. So it's very subtle. But it's very, very clever.
I really like how we're getting more details about the post-blip world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, when they talked about resettlement camps, I thought, I want to learn more about this. Because, like, who are in these camps? Why are they there? Why couldn't they be reintegrated back into their old life? Have there been some societies that have been more flexible about this than others? Is this a cultural thing? Like, I would love to see an anthology of, like, post-blip stories.
I want the show now about just the what they call it, the GRC, the Global Reallocation Council, or whatever they were called.
Global Reintegration Council.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, who are they? What's their deal? How did this happen? What are they for?
Like, how did Tony Stark get on that, I guess, is a question. Or, like, the estate of Tony Stark. But, because you have to know that, like, Pepper Potts is probably on that committee somewhere. But I'm just really intrigued by the pending geopolitical unrest that's going along with this. Because if it's the point where you have camps, and those camps need resources that are only being provided by Robin Hood esque terrorists, like, mm-hmm. why is it like that? What happened, and why is there so much resentment, and, you know, what is the dealio? Like, I want to find out much more about that, because that part to me, like, we're gonna get an answer to the super soldiers, no doubt, because we learned in this episode that there have been successful experiments. Like, we knew that Bucky was a mostly successful experiment. Yeah. On the one side, so surely there have to have been others.
Experiments. Do you mean to get into that now? Or we'll save it.
Well, why don't we go into the really segment? Because, you know, this is where we can get into the experiments a little bit more, and talk about where you think this is going per, like, comic book plots.
First off, I wanna point out some of the characters we saw, and that maybe we saw and you didn't notice that they were there.
Yes.
For example, Isaiah Bradley, he's in the comics. I mean, the whole Black Captain America is in the comics, has been around for like 20 years, that whole storyline. This idea comes from, as both of you got the whiff of, it comes from, it was inspired by the Tuskegee syphilis study. And so you're both aware of that piece of horrid American history.
Shame. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, national shame. Where basically for not just a year or two, but for 40 freaking years, the United States Public Health Service, as well as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, yes, the CDC, surreptitiously, by lying to the participants, lied to a bunch of African-American male participants in the study, telling them that they were getting free health care from the government when basically they were being left untreated for syphilis, so our government could figure out what that really did to people, meaning, of course, white people. And it wasn't until the late 90s that Bill Clinton, when he was president, publicly apologized for this horrific thing we did to all these people. There were no reparations, by the way. Let's not get crazy.
Yes, I can see where an apology would have been enough, she says, spitting out the words.
Oh, sure.
It's not exactly retconning. They're basically telling a story that wasn't told before. But let's go back now to, before I get to one of the other characters you might not have noticed, is let's talk about the serum. The original super soldier serum in the mythos of the comic books, and more importantly, the MCU, was only given to two people in the MCU. And as far as I know, it was only given to one person in the comics. And that was Steve Rogers. The other person who got it in the MCU was the Red Skull.
Okay.
So that serum died with Dr. Erskine, right? And that was true in the MCU, and that's true in the comics as well. And forever, people in the Marvel universes, whether it's comic or cinematic, have been trying to recreate that serum because Captain America was fantastic. And so there's like a bazillion different versions of these in the comics. It seems like probably not that many technically, but a lot. And some of them were developed by the Nazis. Some of them were developed by the communist government in Russia. Some of them were developed by Hydra, you know, so on and so forth. And the one that Bucky got, as well as a replacement arm, was the one that was developed by Hydra. I think partly by Dr. Zola, who we meet in the first Captain America film, and we meet sort of virtually in the second one. Mm-hmm. The one that Isaiah Bradley got in the comic books was developed by one of the two people that were trying to follow on Dr. Erskine's Super Soldier program. And so one of those wound up being in Germany, I think in the war, and the other one in the United States. And so much like the Tuskegee experiment, where people were, black men were taken unknowingly doing this in the comics, it was like 300 black men were subjected to this serum, and it basically killed all but five of them.
Whoa.
Isaiah Bradley was the one who survived of those five, because the rest of them were killed in operations. And basically what he's alluding to in the show about being thrown in prison is, in the comic books, he's sent on a suicide mission. And basically he knows it's a suicide mission. So what he does is, like, I'm just going to go all out. So he basically appropriates a uniform and a shield, basically, from Captain America, who's, I don't know, missing in action at the time or whatever. And he basically goes and does the operation as Captain America. And he's, I think, mostly successful with the mission, but he gets captured and they decide, you know, we can't have this black man coming out and talking about this program where all these people died. So we're just going to throw him in prison forever. And in the comic books, in the, you know, this character is like a hero to black Americans. And there's a lot of famous black Americans who know about him and visit him in prison and stuff like that. So something you may not realize is that, you know, the kid that comes to the door.
Yeah.
That says, you know, you can't come in. He doesn't want to see him.
He's not here. He doesn't live here, whatever. And then...
Yeah. Basically, that's Isaiah's grandson. And guess who he is? He's another character from the MCU. And they didn't name the character's name in the credits, but you'll see that there is a character with the name Eli Bradley, played by Elijah Richardson, who's the actor who played him, in the credits. And Eli Bradley in the comics is the Patriot.
Really?
The lead. Yes, thank you. Thank you. That was appropriate to do at
that
time. That's
the really, yes. Uh-huh.
And so he's basically the leader of the Young Avengers. So now we have four known Young Avengers. Right? From the last show, we have Speed and Wiccan.
Oh, they're launching the Young Avengers, if I remember correctly.
And Hayley Stanfield is going to play Hawkeye come this fall, right?
Yay!
And now we got Patriot, right? So they're stealthing it in there. So that's one thing. The other thing, when you were talking about John Walker's sidekick...
Battlestar.
It's Battlestar, like Galactica?
That's what I thought too, but yeah, it's an eye roller of a name.
Let me tell you why he has the name Battlestar. Remember when I was talking about how thoughtful Marvel comic creators were in the whole,
yes,
lifting the whole idea of the Tuskegee syphilis study and doing that? Well, they also did some bonehead things over the years. And,
what? No, say it isn't,
yeah,
so.
And
really?
Recently, with the John Walker Captain America, who is like Super Patriot or U.S. Agent, where they finally named him or whatever, there were some of these characters called Bold Urban Commandos. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Urban.
Bold Urban Commandos? Oh my gosh.
Bucks and
but oh no no
yeah, just no. Just stick with me here,
no,
before you hear everything. Yeah Young Bucks. Right? And these were the Buckies. And so another, and I'm assuming this was an African-American writer, sort of went to the creators of this stuff and said, you know, that's a disparaging term to call a black man a buck. You do know that, right? And they were like, holy boot.
No, because I'm a white that. Nerd who works with a bunch of other white nerds. Thanks for pointing that out. Oh
my Lord. Thanks for pointing that out. So that's how he got the name Battlestar. So Lamar Hoskins is the fictional character, but he's portrayed by Clay Bennett in the show. But that's a real character, Battlestar. He's the one that sort of takes over the mantle for a while of Bucky, but they didn't want to call him Bucky because don't step in that big bucket of poo. Yeah. It's like, Bucky? No, it's a bucket of poo. So he is Battlestar. So the other person that I did not realize they did this until this episode because I'm stupid and I can't read a casting sheet worth a stupid thing. But you obviously picked up on it. Carly Morgenthau, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, that's Carl Morgenthau. So they gender switched it for the show, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
Because
especially to cast her.
Yes, especially to cast her. Because she does not look like the leader of a huge organization like this.
Nor did she in Solo when we got her there, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always said that the most effective leaders of underground organizations are going to look like people that don't meet the perception of what you'd look like.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this woman with like the world's most enviable freckles.
Yes.
Just the way she played her body language with Bucky, I should say, before Bucky yep. Barnes, before proceeding to wipe the pavement with him was just genius because you know that she uses it.
Yep.
She's like, yeah, if I look like a little girl, then people will underestimate me and off I go.
Yes.
I loved it.
Yeah. It was just delightful. Total awesome and caught me flat footed and I went like, oh, right. Carly Morgenthau. I was doing the Picard facepalm major league there about two-thirds of the way through the episode. So that is really cool. Now, there's another group here we hear mentioned for the first time that we saw written down in the credits for the first episode. And it's written down in the credits for this episode, too, which is the Power Brokers. And I've got to admit, this is kind of shadowy because I can't figure out if the Flag Smashers are trying to get away from the Power Brokers, but the Power Brokers are the ones that have captured and experimented and used a super soldier serum. You know, none of the serums are as good as the original one Erskine used on Steve Rogers. They just,
mm-hmm.
for example, the one that was used on Bucky, the one that was used on the other Winter Soldiers. Remember when in Civil War, Bucky says that, you know, he's not the only Winters. They're good, but they're not as good as that one. And they're certainly not as good as the one that General Thunderbolt Ross gave, what's his name, that became the Abomination in The Incredible Hulk.
Don, I have a quick question for you then.
And yeah.
We've hit the speculation portion.
Oh, yes.
If the Power Brokers are an organization that we've heard about, and it's possible they're chasing after the Flag Smashers, and we get those texts about how you've stolen everything, is it possible that the Power Brokers are the ones who are sitting on the Super Soldier Serum? And that,
it's entirely possible.
And that this group of Flag Smashers like broke out of whatever it is the Power Brokers are doing and are now, you know, running their missions and what have you. And so they basically have two things going on, which is number one, support their one world, one people vision. And then number two is let's not get killed by the people who made us super soldiers.
Right. And it's entirely possible that John Walker and Battlestar are lying. They may have been given one of these super soldier-like serums. Because you saw John Walker waving that shield. Yeah, and that was pretty... Because the lesser super soldier serums, what they do is they don't necessarily give you super strength like Cap had. I mean, Cap went mano-a-mano with Thanos. And Thanos is a titan, right? So you have to have super strength to do that. Bucky doesn't have that, right?
Although he does just... okay when he's dropped out of a plane at 200 feet.
Yes, well, what, which was what
for
the,
fun.
What the lesser super, in the comics, what the lesser super soldier serums gave you was not super strength, but they gave you, what they did was they tuned you to the ultimate abilities you have. They gave you slightly accelerated healing powers, not like caps, and they also slowed down your aging, right? Which is also why Isaiah Bradley is not like a bazillion years old.
Right.
Right, considering when they experimented on him.
Yeah.
So God only knows how old he really is. He's not like Bucky's age. One reason Bucky does not look older, of course, is he was like frozen and thawed out for like, you know, 100 times. So that's sort of the mythos. I don't know how much they'll explain that or whether they'll stick to that.
Okay.
I also don't know whether they're going to do the pseudo super soldier serum that John Walker and Battlestar got. I don't know. Eventually, I can't think of his name all of a sudden. Danny Ramirez, playing Joaquin Torres. He, in the comics, is given one of those serums too, because he becomes the new Falcon.
Okay. That might be fun.
I wonder how Sam would feel if his pal all of a sudden has the serum and is no longer,
Now, Sam never got the super soldier serum.
No.
He's just an incredible badass.
Yes.
And, you know, he's just a trained soldier and pilot, and he's just insane, right? So, so that, you know, that's sort of his superpower. I mean, and the fact that Cap picked him to be an Avenger is, you know, yet again one of the reasons he loved Cap, because Cap trusted him to do that.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't understand his. It's like John Walker just totally doesn't get his relationship with Cap. It wasn't sidekick.
All the things that Steve saw in Sam were the things that made Steve Steve. Like, I have this innate need to do the right thing, and my knee-jerk reaction is to go help somebody. And, you know, he's the guy Mr. Rogers is talking about. Look for the people running toward what happened, and, you know, look for the helpers. And, like, that's always been Sam, and those are the parts of Steve that made him Captain America and not just, you know, a schmuck that got a shot. Like, because there's a big gap between those things, as we're finding out here. You know, just because you get that doesn't automatically make you a good guy. So I think he saw a lot of himself in Sam, and I think that's where they had a relationship that's very different from what he and Bucky had, and, you know, all of that. And I think we're gonna see more of that as this goes on. This is what, you know, that's like that. I'm gonna help. Let me help you. I have walked into this situation. It's not as good as it could be, and I'm gonna do what I can to change that. Like, that was the Sam show the whole last episode.
Yep. Now, getting back to the power broker or the power brokers, I still don't understand where that was going. And so if some of our listeners, all five of you, some of our listeners, if you could explain to me on Twitter, explain to us where that's going. I want your theories or whatever. And, like, you know, what am I missing about this whole thing? Getting to characters we haven't seen yet. Well, we did see him. Daniel Brühl is Baron Zemo, or Helmet Zemo.
Do you keep your title when you go to jail?
Good question.
I don't know. Is I don't it her- know if you...
like if are there differences between titles that are granted to you by nobility versus hereditary titles? Is he a hereditary baron in Segovia? Like, these are this is the kind of thing that I wouldn't say keeps me up.
That's the thing I really want to know now.
But I do get kind of distracted by wondering, like, baron of what? Was it a military honor? And if that's the case,
they never call him Baron in the MCU. They just call him Zemo. He was Baron Zemo in the comics. There were two comic book characters. One who I think is his father or grandfather or something, some relative, who is also Baron Zemo. But apparently, there's a whole long line of Baron Zemo, and Helmut Zemo is the last one, right? That's in the comics.
See, I just love the Baron. I love Baron as like a peerage title too, because it's like way down in the list. But like Barons always seem crazy.
Yes,
it's like Barons are likely. I think it's like a requirement, a Lisa. Yeah, no, it's like great because. You know, earls and marquees have art patrons, and earls are schemey and maybe like under ministers in a treasury somewhere, and dukes are off on their own planet. But like barons are bonkers, and I love them.
Barons are always plotting the overthrow of whatever government there is.
It's gonna make me so sad if it turns out that in the MCU, the baronies of Sokovia don't even exist. And he's just Helmut Zemo, and he's not a Baron, because I really want a Baron. I want someone crazy.
The actor said he did feel like a Baron wearing the new costume they're going to give him, which is they're going to give him the purple mask that he wears in the comics.
Oh, I hope there's like brocade in there somewhere too. Like Barons need to have please.
Oh yeah, well, I haven't seen it in the show, but it's real fancy pants in the comics. So,
ooh.
Like Viscounts just seem like strivers, but Barons are pretty happy to be they're just happy to be at the peerage because it lets them do terrible experiments in the basement. Like,
oh, yes,
man, I hope that's where they're going.
So I don't know how he's related to the Flag Smashers or the Power Brokers. I don't understand this whole dynamic, but I'm hoping that Agent 13. Sharon Carter, who I hope appears next episode, will explain it all to us.
Well, they haven't listed her name in the credits yet, but we've seen the icon. My guess is they're going to go talk to the Baron, who I will refer to as the Baron until I get intelligence otherwise, honestly. Like, my hope is that they go talk to the Baron, because they're going to be like, how did you find the Russian experiments? How many others do you know about? And he'll be like, well, let me tell you. And he's like a useful source of intelligence. And they'll be like, we can use him in his rabid hatred of super people. And then we'll just, I guess, distract him before he turns on us.
Hey, frenemies, right?
Yeah.
I don't...
The enemy of my enemy is my not trying to kill me person.
Is my frenemy is not currently trying to kill me.
Yeah, something like that. So I want to see where that's going. The other thing to remember, there are only 6 episodes to this whole series.
We're a third of the way through.
Exactly.
Well, because we've gotten our stakes set up now. The stakes are we need to go find out who's making super soldier people and get a shield back. And Sam needs to make sure that his boat is okay in the next 4 episodes.
Yes.
And Bucky has to...
And Bucky needs to make sure that his head is okay.
And he has to continue making some amends. Like, because, you know, that's... They wouldn't have gone to the trouble of putting that in the preview here if it weren't going to come back as a factor at some point, too. So, yeah. But, yeah. No, I think this is moving along at a brisk clip. I love it when series actually wrap up in a fairly tidy manner, and I'm super happy with the pace of this one.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of wrapping things up in a super tidy manner, that's not a skill any of us have really demonstrated yet, but I'm...
No.
But I'm willing to say that I think we've talked this one out. Don, I want to thank you for a super enlightening
really
segment.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
I've learned so much.
I know how to use Wikipedia, so...
Oh, man, don't do the magic. Such
a don't tell us that.
It's a Viscount thing to say. Be more like a Baron.
Be more Baron. Yeah.
Yeah, be more Baron.
Channel your inner Baron Zemo. So,
I like this. Yes.
Anyway, I want to thank everybody who listened to the former Maximoff Overdrive, and now you're I Want My MCU TV. I have Kelly Gamont with me.
Hey, thanks so much. This has been a complete blast. I love when Don takes us to Marvel School.
I've had Marvel Schoolmaster Don Melton with me.
Howdy, howdy, fans. I have no idea what I'm doing.
And I was Lisa Schmeiser. Thanks for listening.